Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 147 with Dan Krynas. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Dan Krynas, we explore a number of interesting topics like leading without labels, challenges are merely opportunities, no one person can change another until they want to change. Thanks for spending some time with me and listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving students' soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Well, Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm not only really honored to be a guest on the show, but I'm a huge fan of Better Leaders, Better Schools, and it's just a privilege to be here.
And the privilege is all mine, Dan, to have you on the show. And I'm so happy to be able to connect with you. And I can't wait for this conversation and see the value, you know, that we bring the listeners. Dan, can you start at the beginning and tell us what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Yeah, I'll try and make a very long story as short as I can, but I think really as far back as I can remember just about, I wanted to be a teacher. And I was encouraged by actually my own mother, who always would tell me, I think you really need to be working with kids. And my first job ever really was being a camp counselor. And I loved getting to work with kids and just being able to each and every day, at least for the 8 weeks in the summertime, be able to provide them with a good time and model for them and just lead the way for them. And that's really what inspired me. And I initially actually in growing up in middle school, high school, I was big into music, and I initially went and studied at college to be a music teacher. That didn't work out so well, and I kind of left the education scene for a bit to have a brief, short-lived career in radio production and broadcast journalism, which was a lot of fun. And that's why I like doing things like this and having my own podcast now. But I realized it just wasn't the life that I wanted to live. And I was about to get married. And I said, I need to get back into education. And so I did. And really, actually, within a couple of months after getting married, I was back in school for a master's degree. And I was starting to work in schools. And very next year is when I got into education.
I appreciate you taking us back, because I didn't know that fun fact about you in terms of journalism and radio. And that explains a lot, you know, having your own podcast as well. And I'm wondering if you could share with the listeners the story behind starting Leader of Learning.
I'd love to. Like I said, I studied broadcast journalism in college. When the education thing wasn't working out so much, I said, what else would I want to do? And it just was kind of natural. I had this passion for journalism and broadcasting, and I have a love of sports. And so I was able to basically parlay that into both in college and a little bit after, you know, when I graduated with my bachelor's degree, being on the radio. And so over the last year or so, as I've grown to listen to more and more podcasts, I said, man, what a cool way to take or kind of revisit the skills and experiences that I had and started to hone with the journalism and the broadcasting with my passion for education and my love of educational leadership. And I'm able to bring all those things together. And my show, Leader of Learning, is really basically about what I'm passionate about, which is educational leadership, transforming education through leadership in all aspects of education. And I like to call it leading without labels. So no matter what position you're in, what title you have, how you can be an educational leader.
Can you share some stories maybe behind some of the more fascinating examples of leading without a label that you've come across?
Let me take you back for a second. And this is an experience that I had, even though I did kind of have a label. Personally, my first experience with this style of leadership, transformational leadership, was when I was in college. I was in a fraternity and I was elected to be the president of the fraternity in, I guess it was my junior year into my senior year of college. And we were in an interesting place as a chapter, and we wanted to grow. We wanted to expand. We wanted to build our reputation both in the Greek community at the college, but also with the university itself and also with our national organization. And so basically by doing some things that I kind of felt came natural to me, we were able to really make some significant improvements and change like in leaps and bounds. And some of those changes really included this transformational leadership where I was basically empowering the other members of the chapter to step up and lead in their own way and in their own, you know, put their own spin on it. And it was really, really powerful. And so basically when it comes to any kind of leadership, but especially educational leadership, I think what teachers don't understand, or any school staff for that matter, is just how impactful their leadership can be, even if they don't have, let's say, an administrative position. You know, I've seen teachers do that through coaching and other extracurricular activities, or I've seen teachers do that when it comes to organizing events. And those might be sort of school sponsored, like incentive events. You know, my school does PBIS, so we like to reward students and emphasize the positive behavior by throwing events that they can participate in and have fun and, you know, just get them to forget about the learning part of school and actually bring in the fun part of school as well. But yeah, I think teachers can step up and lead in ways that they maybe didn't know before or even during that what they're doing is actually leadership.
It's a really interesting story, and it speaks a bit to your own leadership style. It sounds very distributive, you know, empowering people to lead in ways they might not even realize that they could. I'm building capacity, but could you unpack a bit more how you would describe your own leadership style and how you developed it?
Yeah. So again, I think that experience as the president of my fraternity really taught me a lot mm-hmm. about my own leadership style and, you know, made me reflect, I guess, and probably not at the time, but years later, I can reflect back and say like, oh, that's what I did, or oh, that's how we're able to become much more successful than we were in a pretty short amount of time. I was in that position for, you know, just a year. But I think it really goes back to tapping into your human resources. You know, so as a school leader, it's about making your fellow colleagues aware of what they bring to the table. Yep. Right now, I'm an instructional coach at my school. And one of the things that I really try hard to do each and every day, and I think I do it pretty successfully, is to get the teachers who I work with to understand what they bring to the table, the skills that they have that are really strong, and emphasize those so that everybody realizes that collectively they're all working toward the good of the entire organization. And of course, in schools, that means getting our students to be as successful as they possibly can be.
I love that approach too, in terms of putting people where they're strong, so they can operate out of those gifts that they have. Are there any tools or exercises that you use, Dan, in order to identify those strengths?
So, you know, you thanks for bringing up my show. You mentioned Leader of Learning, and I actually got the opportunity not too long ago to interview someone that I look up to very much. His name is Mark C. Crowley. He wrote a book called Lead from the Heart, which is not necessarily an education-related book. He's a business guy. He was in financial services for a long time. But I think to answer that question, I go back to what I learned from his book and what I learned from him personally when he was a guest on my show, which is just that, lead from the heart. And so I think first and foremost, if you're going to get people to be inspired and to work collaboratively toward the betterment of students and schools and just to make the school itself a better place, you have to tap into their emotions. Mm. And so I think that when I'm working with teachers as an instructional coach, and I'd like to, you know, obviously keep this with me as I hopefully move into some more leadership opportunities throughout the rest of my career, you know, make sure that they feel that they want to improve themselves and improve their students. You know, literally, this is a conversation that I just had with my 7-year-old son over the last day or so.
Nice. Yeah.
So I bring that up because it doesn't matter what position someone's in or what field they're in. They're not going to want to change unless they feel the need to change. And it's one of the things that I'm as much of a fan of growth mindset as I am. What I'm realizing as I go along here and as it relates to leadership is to change someone's mindset it's not really going to happen until you change their feelings and their emotions. So, you know, you asked about strategies and like tips and tricks. I think first and foremost, you have to find a way, and I can't really give you that one little golden nugget because it's going to be different in every situation and with everybody you're working with, but just find a way to tap into them and their feelings.
That's really interesting. And, you know, I think it's about being observant, you know, and personalizing the approach to every individual you work with to try to identify those strengths. Sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, it sounds cliche, I'm sure, at this point, because I know I hear it all the time. I'm sure you do too, but you've been in leadership a long time as well. It's about the relationships that you build with the people who are around you. And in order to get them to, you know, connect with their own feelings, and in order to tap into them as a resource, you have to be able to know who they are, what they're strong at, what they're weak at, you know, what really makes them, you know, fire on all cylinders, let's say.
And to give the listeners too something practical, like exercise wise, I just want to share real quick. We read Leadership Step by Step with the Mastermind, and Josh Spodek, forget the title of the actual exercise, but in terms of this emotional connection that Dan is talking about and identifying people's passions, sometimes you just ask them, hey, what is your passion? And you'll get a cookie cutter response, you know, that's not very deep at all. It's much more surface level. But even after you hear that, don't let them off the hook. And you could say, well, hey, my friend Dan has this podcast Leader of Learning that he's passionate about, and he does it because of X, Y, and Z. And then I got this other friend, Jethro, that does Transformative Principle, and he podcasts, that's his passion because of X, Y, and Z. And so really, what is your passion? You know, and a lot of times I find just by giving those examples of other people, what they're passionate about, invites people to a little, to take the plunge, to be a little bit more vulnerable, to share a bit, you know, in terms of what is underneath the iceberg, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I think for some people, it's easy to not only connect with their own feelings, but to be able to express what they're passionate about. And some people, it's not. And I've experienced that certainly with students too. We brought Genius Hour to my school a couple of years ago, and it's the same thing, really. You know, you tell a student, hey, this is your opportunity to learn about what you want to learn about. And some of them are like, yeah, let's go, I'm ready. And they're so passionate or interested in something that it's easy for them. But you have to kind of pick up the kids and motivate the kids who are like, I don't really know yet what I'm interested in. So yeah, I get that.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. So, you know, Dan, because you listen to the show, that I love to ask about, you know, mistakes and what you learned from them. So What would you consider, Dan, your worst mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Probably one of the first things that I did when I became the instructional coach at my school was really the biggest mistake I made as the instructional coach at my school. So this position didn't exist before I came into it about 2 years ago. And I was hired for the position before the school year started in August, but I didn't get to take over until right around this time. So like just around Thanksgiving time, which is when we're recording this episode. And what that meant for me was that literally my role in the building, in the school, changed overnight. And I didn't expect that to be such a problem because I was like, hey, I'm already in the building and I've worked with these people every day for the last, you know, whatever it was, year and a half that I had been at that school. But there's a very different perception of someone in this kind of position versus a classroom teacher. And actually what I learned was that people's opinions of me did change overnight. And so I think the mistake that I made was really early on expecting, sort of falsely expecting, that people were going to be totally open and willing to invite me into their classrooms, invite me to strike up these coaching relationships, coaching cycles with them, maybe give them some feedback, positive and, you know, constructive criticism. And man, was I wrong. So I sent out an email to, I think if I'm not mistaken, I think I sent it to everybody and said, you know, here's what I'm looking to do. I want to work with you and I'll come visit your class. I'll give you some feedback, blah, blah, blah. Well, literally the teacher who worked in the classroom next door to me, so like my classroom neighbor, let's say, he shot back an email that said, well, look, you can come into my classroom, but I'm not interested in your feedback. I'm not interested in your coaching. Like, just no, I'm just not going to do that. And coincidentally, he was also the union president. At the time, I think he was our building representative. And so I was like, well, now what am I going to do? You know, I haven't even started yet. And this guy is telling me that I can't. He's not even going to work with me here. But what was great about that opportunity, and I say opportunity because it's like, you know, learning from my mistakes as well. So what I learned from that, because we were able to sit down and have a really great conversation about it, was that certainly there were some things that I needed to do differently in terms of how I communicated with the teachers that I was going to be supporting now. But also, I think there just, in my opinion, needed to be a better understanding. I needed to make it more clear and define that instructional coach role better because no one had ever been in that position at my school before. And so I think really overall, the mistake that was made was just really about communication. And once I had that conversation with this particular teacher and once I was really better able to establish myself and my goals for my position, it's been much better. And then basically every single day since then, I've been working on those trusting relationships with those teachers too.
I appreciate you sharing, you know, that story and what you learned from it. You've mentioned growth mindset a number of times this podcast, and I'm curious, how does that integrate with the work you do as an instructional leader?
I'm really glad you asked. So first, I'll tell you that I'm actually a doctoral student and I'm looking to study the link between transformational leadership practices and inspiring a growth mindset in classroom teachers to want to innovate in their classrooms. So it's become a really big passion of mine. And it started because I took a massive open online course or a MOOC a handful of years ago as I was kind of getting into this whole coaching thing. And it was given by an organization called Match. They're a teacher residency, like a new teacher resident program. And basically the whole course was about dealing with teachers and coaching teachers based on their mindset. And it even went into kind of categorizing four different types of mindsets. And I don't remember quite what each of them were called, but I'm kind of paraphrasing here. One was, you're right, I'm wrong, which actually was really like, you're right and I suck. The other was kind of like, I'm right and you suck. In other words, like the teacher just thinks they know it all. Whatever you say, they're not going to do. They're not going to want to listen to it. They're very resistant. There was the eternal optimist who is basically like, yes, 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 you to death. And, you know, they'll do it, they'll do it, they'll do it. But really, they never do. And I'm trying to remember the fourth one, it'll come back to me. But anyway, so through taking this course, I was like, man, that makes a lot of sense. In order to really have someone change or inspire them to maybe do things differently, it's all about getting them to think differently. And I already mentioned that now I think going forward, I'm learning more and more all the time that the heart-mind connection is more important than maybe a lot of people think, because although I really love that idea of growth mindset, again, it kind of goes back to hitting someone at their core and getting them to really feel like they want to change before any mindset shift can happen.
It's like if you unlock that heart piece, right, and activate it, then the sky's the limit. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, growth mindset is awesome. And I do very much believe in that difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. And now being an instructional coach and a school leader for a few years, I can totally see how some people have one over the other. And many of us have both. Like we're willing to grow in certain areas and we're just stuck in our ways or we're dead set against changing in other areas. But no one person can change another person. I think that's what I realize more and more every single day. No one person can change another until they want to change. So I think as much as you talk, as anyone can talk about mindset shifts, it's about sort of that emotional shift that needs to happen first. Another book I read a handful of years ago was one called Switch. And it was all about making change. Chip and Dan Heath were the authors of that book. And that's a big part of what they talk about in that book as well, sort of appealing to someone's emotional versus their rational side, like losing weight. You know, you could tell someone all or tell yourself all you want, I need to. But until you really, really want to, like deep down on an emotional level, you say, man, I really want to change, or I want to lose weight, or whatever it is that you're looking to do, it's just not going to happen.
We read Switch also in the mastermind. So that's a great one. It makes me think of, I don't know if it was Motivating the Elephant, which had to do with the emotions, but there were so many incredible examples. And a lot of times, and this is good for listeners, you should really go out and check out that book Dan just mentioned, because we often see people doing, let's say, a low performance, right? Or we have a new initiative and it almost may seem like they're dragging their feet or trying to move in the opposite direction. But where Switch really challenged me, Dan, was that the idea, as a leader, have I really given enough training and supported and developed the people enough with this new change? And if not, a lot of times our assumptions about them just not wanting to get on board are often wrong, and they just need more support.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it has to do with, like I said, you know, tapping into someone and really like getting to the core of where they want to go and what they want to do. I had a former supervisor, I guess you can call it, where their definition of leadership would be, you know, a leader is someone who can make the jobs of everyone else around them easier. And I got to be honest, for a while, I kind of wrestled with that. I was like, I don't know, is that really leadership? But I think the more I know about growth mindset and leading from the heart and all the stuff that we've been talking about, it does make sense, because it's not saying that you as the leader need to go out and do their work for them. It's about finding ways, whether it be externally or internally within each of your, you know, colleagues or whoever you're leading, you know, finding ways for them to maybe just make subtle changes, or could be drastically as well, to do something differently to make their jobs better. If we're talking about a classroom teacher, make their students better, of course.
It's interesting because, you know, even going back a bit in the podcast, you talked about how no one person can change another, right, until they want to change. And that's sort of a scary idea to think about and wrestle with, you know, as a leader, because here we are as change agents. I'm curious, you know, with that idea of leadership and making people's jobs easier, why do you think it was so hard to accept that first before you really started thinking about it?
I think it was because, to me, making someone's job easier, making someone else's job easier, probably meant making my job harder. Like, as a leader, I felt like that would require me to, I don't know, do their jobs for them or find ways to, you know, to just ease their burden. But that really wasn't what it was about. It was really more about just, like you said, just supporting them and finding ways to make their work better and easier.
Dan, I love this quote by Derek Sivers, and I love asking guests how they'd answer this, but Derek says, "What's ordinary to you is extraordinary to me." So Dan, what would you consider your superpower?
My superpower, I'm not necessarily a wear my heart on my sleeve kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And so what I mean by that is, you could actually look at me, and even though I'm really excited about something, you might not be able to tell, which I think that's one thing that I try and look to change in myself all the time. But regardless of whether I look the part, I think that I am skilled at getting people to be interested and to be passionate. And I don't even mean the teachers I work with, but I do feel like in many different situations I'm in, even with my own family, my kids, just, you know, showing them a good time and just having people kind of relax and kick back and just kind of live in the moment. And actually, as a classroom teacher, I found that I did that pretty well. Before I got into this position as an instructional coach, I was a reading intervention teacher. And of course, I'd get the students who struggled in reading, and therefore coming to an extra reading class was really not something they wanted to do. And I kind of set up my class in such a way where I wanted it to be real laid back, kind of like me, you know, laid back, not in your face. Yeah. I wasn't looking to have them believe that, you know, there was going to be some like magic going on in my classroom. I just wanted to be nice and laid back and kick back, but at the same time, kind of on a like covert operation style, like still make sure that I was really ramping up the expectations and making sure that the students felt supported and felt like they were going to succeed no matter what, because I was going to make sure of it. And I think that's, whether it's in school or in life, I think that's kind of where I fit in.
Dan, do you have any morning routines or rituals that you utilize consistently to help you be successful?
You know, not really. Although I am kind of a creature of habit, I don't know that I'd call it a routine. I guess my routine is that my kids tend to wake up early at home, so right. I don't really sleep past like 6:30. But I tend to eat the same breakfast every morning while I'm driving to work. I have my granola bar and my banana. And I don't know. I just I don't know that my routine necessarily helps, you know, inspire me or, you know, like prepare me for the day. But I just think having a routine in general, like for me, just kind of getting up and getting out the same way every day, or maybe even eating the same thing every day, it helps because it's just, it just seems right. It just seems normal. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Oh, it absolutely does. You know, I've heard numbers of stories of really just like highly, highly successful people that do something similar in the sense of they eat the same meal at the same restaurant or have the same meal, you know, like you do with your breakfast banana and granola bar, or they might even wear the same outfit, you know, day after day. And the reason that it impacts them in such a way is because it's just one less decision to make. You got consistency there. You got what works for you. And so I'm not necessarily telling all the listeners, hey, wear the same clothes, you know, or have the same shirt five times or whatever. But where you can almost like automate your life, I think, Dan, like that leads to you being able to put creative energy somewhere else.
Yeah, I will say that more and more recently, as I've, you know, created my own podcast and gotten more into that, it's definitely become a routine where when I'm in my car and I have about a 40 to 45 minute commute each way from my home to my school, definitely listening to other podcasts like yours about education and educational leadership. Ooh. Because, I'm a fan. I'm a big fan. It's professional development for me. You know, it's inspiration for my own show. And I just think that, you know, I tell people all the time about being a podcaster myself that it's an amazing form of professional development that people don't think is really professional development. You know, you watch something or you listen to something about what you're, you know, getting back to the passion thing, what you're passionate about. Well, you're developing yourself. You know, my wife has teased me before about my connectedness and my involvement in social media such as Voxer and Twitter and the education sphere. Right. But she's a trained pastry chef and she's big into like cake decorating. And I said, yeah, but if you had a group of people that you could, you know, talk about cake decorating with every day and learn a lot from them and that would inspire you, you'd probably like that too. And she agrees. But yeah, just you know, connecting with other educators and listening to Voxer and checking out, well, not while I'm driving, checking out Twitter, I'm not doing that, but listening to podcasts and just even spending some time in the car developing myself before school and after school. I love that.
Yeah, university commute, you know, that's the best type of way of learning. Back when I was in Chicago driving to my school, you know, I was consuming podcasts like crazy. The same is true in Houston and now in Antwerp. Yeah, when I'm not in a car, I'm on a bike, but the same thing. Pop those earbuds in and listen to a bunch of great podcasts or audiobooks and, you know, get as much learning done as possible. You know, with your background in podcasting and in radio, you got to be clear on your message. Or, you know, I'm curious how you prepare for podcasts, because I think that will serve the listeners too. They have to get up and speak to different stakeholders, right? Whether that's the board, mm-hmm. parents, the staff, students, whatever. And I think, you know, I'm just curious how you get prepared for doing a podcast, or, you know, do you have any ideas that you'd like to share with the listeners about messaging?
You know, I'm nowhere near as experienced with the whole podcasting thing as you, but I think what's helped me, and being that I can bring in some of the background with the journalism, is, I guess, first and foremost, just knowing where you want to go. You know, I have a show that's all about educational leadership, but educational leadership from the standpoint of you can be an educational leader regardless of what role you're in and what title you have. So I try and tackle that from all different angles. Most of my guests are other educators, but some are not. I mentioned Mark Crowley, who wrote the Lead from the Heart book. But I think as it relates to, you know, setting up each episode or booking each guest, It's a matter of, you know, looking at leadership from a new angle and really making sure that that comes across to anyone and everyone who might be listening to the show. And so I find guests who are leaders in the field of education, but people might not really know it. For example, I've talked to Jamie Donnelly, who I consider to be an amazing leader when it comes to augmented and virtual reality technologies and how they're used in education. I've spoken to Sarah Thomas, or now Dr. Sarah Thomas, about connecting educators through EduMatch. And, you know, she's leading the way in terms of being a connected educator. And so I prepare for those shows, or I book those shows based on, you know, what avenues of educational leadership are out there that maybe people don't really think about. And then when I have each guest on, I'm doing my research, doing my homework, and asking them questions that I'm interested in and I think my listeners would be interested in when it comes to educational leadership, but also really being able to provide a voice to the guests as well and have them share their stories and maybe come on and promote what they want to promote, but still maintaining that lens on educational leadership.
That's awesome. And the listeners know too, hey, click the cover art. You'll get the show notes and a link to Dan's podcast, Leader of Learning, will be there for you. And Dan, when you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Wow, that's a good question. When I think of leader, I got to go back to Mark Crowley. I know I've mentioned him before. He's been a guest on my show. But when I think about who a leader is, I think of someone like that who finds ways to inspire the people that they're working with and who work under them. And, you know, that's who I'm trying to be. That's the kind of name and reputation I'm trying to build for myself. Someone who isn't about leadership for the title or the power. You know, I really have never made it a secret with the people that I work with, including my administrators and even my superintendent, about what my goals are and ambitions are. Everyone knows that I'd like to get into administration. And so whereas they could probably be like, oh, look at this guy, he's, you know, power hungry, or he's just looking for any, you know, the next opportunity to step up somewhere. But I don't know, I use it to my advantage. I've never shied away from that. I use it to my advantage because I think that it allows me to inspire the people that I work with in that same way, you know, really getting them to care about what they do and really come to work and to school every day and work with the students that they work with every day because they want to be there. They want to see their students succeed, and they're going to push themselves to make sure that they're able to then push their students even further.
And speaking of inspiration, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Well, I keep talking about this same book. So if you haven't read Lead from the Heart, I would recommend that. And it's, again, not an educational book per se. If you go back and you listen to the episode I did with Mark Crowley, the author, he speaks about how his book has been embraced by the field of education. And so I think that's a pretty powerful connection right there. There are, I believe he said five, if I'm not mistaken, five different universities that at a graduate level have their students use that book as the text for that leadership course, educational leadership course. And I think that says a lot about where we need to head as school leaders. It's not about just focusing on the students or about, you know, it's kind of become like a buzzword, I guess, like focusing on the standardized assessments or the statistics. It's focusing on the people. And really, when you lead from the heart, you'll be able to inspire those people that you work with and truly get greatness out of them in any way that you can find to get it.
Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. And Dan, what do you do for fun?
Well, when I'm not growing myself professionally and working at my job and as a doctoral student, I guess what I have time really left for in my life is my family. I have two amazing kids, a 7-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter, and my wife. We live in Connecticut, and you know, we will hang around our area or travel around and getting together with friends and family and just really trying to enjoy this time in my kids' lives. You know, I made the decision to go back to school at a time where my kids would still be young enough so that hopefully it doesn't take me too much longer to finish up. And that way, when I'm done, I'll still have plenty of time to really enjoy them and be around for all of their accomplishments and their milestones and all the things that you really are, you know, you want to see and you want to be proud of as a parent. So definitely just having fun with my family, hanging out. You know, yesterday, even though it's probably a little early and it's still November, we put up our Christmas tree, you know, just making memories like that, I think, is what it's all about.
I saw that. I love it too. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
If you could be good automatically at anything in the world, what would it be?
I think I'd really like to be better at art. Growing up, I mentioned before, I was pretty big into music. And so I guess artistically speaking, I'm okay, but really more when it comes to the performing arts, I've never, and even as a classroom teacher, I'd always preface any kind of drawing I would make on my chalkboard or whiteboard by saying, look, guys, I'm not an artist. So don't, you know, don't kill me. Don't stone me to death. I'd like to have a little more talent in the arts, in the fine arts, like, you know, drawing and painting and that sort of thing.
What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just a day?
So I've heard you ask this question, of course, to many of your guests as I've been a fan of your show for a while. And I've thought about this question. And still, when you ask it, I'm like, huh, I don't know. Which way do I want to go here? But I think if I were to narrow it down to anything, I would actually go with let your students shine. Because I think that means so many things. You know, it means really getting to know your students. It means making your class and presenting material in ways that really connect and resonate with the students. But of course, it means, you know, letting the students let their voices and their choices really come to light in your classroom and just find ways for them to be successful.
Well, if you knew that question was coming up, then you absolutely know this question is right around the corner. Dan, you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
You know, it's funny. I spoke to someone at my school recently about this. I think, to be honest, and I haven't really heard of this being done yet, I have this idea of, even at a secondary level, removing the names of classes. So even if you're quote unquote departmentalized, the school would basically be built around classes, of course, with teachers in the rooms, but that aren't really tied to any one specific subject area. Like, you wouldn't go to English class, and you wouldn't go to social studies class, and you wouldn't go to math class. And so I think, to be honest, I'd like to experiment with that a little bit. And I think that in addition to having lots of different flexibilities in terms of the physical environment at a school, I'd really want to be flexible in terms of the actual content that gets taught in each class as well. I'd really like to see how that works.
I love that answer. That'd be fascinating. If you build the school, let me know if I can observe.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Parting words of advice would basically just be, as I've mentioned several times throughout the show, just try and lead from the heart. And no matter whether it's your friends and family or other people you work with or the students in your classrooms, if you're a classroom teacher, really find ways to connect with them on an emotional level and appeal to their feelings before you can try and appeal to anything else, including their minds and their mindsets. And, you know, once again, my show is Leader of Learning. It can be found on iTunes and Google Play and anywhere really where podcasts are found. The website is leaderoflearning.com. And essentially on social media everywhere, I am at dkreiness, dkreiness.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Dan. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Dan in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Dan, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show. and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.